Your soon-to-be ex is about to be your ex for a reason. Whether by your choice or theirs, somewhere along the way, your connection is no longer what it was when you first decided to say, I do. Naturally, that means your communication has broken down too. Some of you may not even ever want to speak to your ex again. And some of you are so sick of being spoken to like trash, but most of us are sick of sucking it up to get through it. But sucking it up could just be the difference in how your kids remember the way that you showed up in this difficult transition, or even be the difference in the entire outcome of your settlement. I mean, imagine if a secret recording of you is played for the judge. And yes, apparently that is perfectly legal in some states, as I learned from today's discussion, and it influences the judge's decision in your settlement. This is Divorced and Determined AF, the show that supports women with the information you need to know before, during, and beyond divorce. My name is Jamie Milam, and I am determined to empower you to make informed decisions and take aligned action through the power of awareness so that you can live the life that you deserve. And let's be real. Our exes knew how to test us in our marriage, and that is likely not about to change. But the way that we react can certainly have a major effect on the outcome of our divorce and therefore our future. This is about sucking it up in the short term so that you have a better chance for a peaceful long term. So, is there a right and a wrong way to communicate with your soon-to-be ex while going through a divorce? Well, today's guest, Christina Butler, a high-conflict divorce coach, would say yes, there is. In fact, your knee-jerk emotional reactions can unfortunately influence the perceptions during your divorce proceedings and even label you as high conflict. That's not going to be great. With a master's in counseling and having experienced divorce herself, she understands the natural emotional reactions that we have, but has also witnessed how it can negatively impact your future. And she's going to share some of that with us today. She's going to give us the practical advice that you need to help you avoid your communication being used against you in court, guide you in how to not let your emotions hijack you, and give us guidance on the best communication modes, all to support the long-term benefits for yourself and any children involved. We've even got a great simplified handout to serve as reminders from today's episode over in our free resource center. So when you're done listening today, head over to peaceofminddivorce.info to download your copy today. Now, let's get started. Divorce is an overwhelming process that most of us did not know how to navigate until we were in the thick of it, which can cost us a lot more time, money, and energy than necessary. Divorced and Determined AF hopes to change that. I'm your host, Jamie Milam. I'm a realtor and a certified divorce specialist who not only works with divorcing couples when selling their home, but I am also divorced, and I know firsthand how much having thorough resources would positively impact women for years to come. I'm bringing together fellow divorcees and experts working in the field to talk about this private taboo topic, all with the goal to help you feel prepared, educated, assured, confident, and empowered to make informed decisions related to your divorce journey. So whether you're just now considering a divorce, in the midst of it, or are now navigating a new norm and are determined AF to do it your way, this is your safe space. You deserve it. Christina, I am so glad that you're joining us today because I personally have learned just how effective communication, how important it really is. And I feel like I just learned that over the last few years. And honestly, I wish that it was a skill that I had mastered far sooner. But no matter how skilled we think that we might be at communication, nothing tests us more than a divorce process. Well, actually, maybe teenagers, but that's not today's show.
Absolutely.
But, right? I know. Any moms of teenagers out there right now, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But really quick, before we dive in, I just kind of wanted to define what a certified divorce coach is in case we have any listeners today who aren't familiar. Divorce coaches, y'all, they can walk you through many of your non-legal practicalities of divorce, really helping you get organized and prepared, but also helping you develop skills that are necessary to negotiate and effectively communicate your needs, your wants, and your desires without being hijacked by your emotions. Really, it's a goal-oriented process designed to support, motivate, and guide you through divorce to help you make the best possible decisions for your future. Would you say that about sums it up correctly, Christina? Did I get that right?
Absolutely. That is 100% what my job is.
Good. Well, listen, we all need it. It's kind of like a hand-holding girlfriend, but a yes. girlfriend who can help you actually organize and have the preparation for all different types of divorces. Because as we all know, every single one of our divorces are going to be different. But there are some still standard things that we can do in advance to get prepped, but also to have a non-biased party help us when it comes to this communication aspect. So there's just so many benefits to having the assistance of a divorce coach through the process. But the part that we're going to focus on today, you guys, is the communication aspect here. When you and I last spoke, Christina, I had asked you what was one of the most common issues that you encounter when working with your clients. And it was exactly this: understanding how our emotions can influence the perceptions, you know, during divorce proceedings and mm-hmm. then therefore the way that we end up communicating through this process as well. The emotions that we have during this process, they are certainly valid. But when they're projected, it can really actually hinder our process. So can you tell us a bit more about how you see this exhibited with your clients? Maybe common signs of our emotions taking over and sometimes hijacking our ability to, you know, keep our emotions between the lines in a manner that can keep propelling us toward the end goal?
Oh, absolutely. You know, our partners always know exactly which buttons to push for us, and they will do that in a way that makes us respond in a very emotional way. We'll start getting defensive and we'll kind of miss the point of what we were asking for to begin with. You kind of veer off topic just to defend yourself against whatever button they just pushed on you. And that right there is all emotion. If it's I, and you, in your communication back, that is all emotion. So my job is to really help you take that step back and focus on the goal and the ask versus how this person is making you feel inside, and really trying to help you not be, you don't need to defend yourself here. This is not the goal of the divorce. It's not the goal of the communication that you need to have back and forth. It's really, let's focus on you and what you need in order to move forward instead of trying to be like, you did this to me. So that's exactly what I try to do.
You make a really good point, because what happens is oftentimes I think divorcing couples end up doing this even in mediation or arbitration and maybe even collaborative law, right? Where if you're sitting across the table, you get into this space where you kind of want your voice to be heard. Right? That's really ultimately what's the deeper root here is we want to be heard. And that's why we go into that mode of defense. It doesn't mean that the feelings that you're having aren't valid. However, the space to explore that and the space to be heard is probably a space more in a therapeutic space, like 100%. With a therapist or a mental health provider, life coach. But if you can help them kind of remove those I and you statements, that brings us back to the goal. These signs of this defensiveness, do they morph or evolve through the different stages of divorce? Like, are they different or maybe even more severe in the midst of it than post, or
you know,
at the very start versus in the middle of it? Like, what's your experience working with clients?
In my experience, you know, I think maybe we've all watched too many movies where you get to stand up in court and be like, he's da-da-da-da, and all your emotions take over, and that's just not reality. But in the beginning, I think it is really hard, especially if you feel like you've been wronged in some way. You really want everyone to know your side of the story. And if your ex-spouse is spouting complete falsehoods and non-truths, and you don't want people to think poorly of you. So you're always trying to defend yourself and say, that's not true. And you're posting online a lot and you're just, you know, defend. And usually that is right in the beginning. And then if this gets very high conflict and you end up in the courts, you know, that will be something that you don't want to do. You don't want to look like you're defending yourself, especially on online forums. And anytime, but mostly in the beginning, it is he or she did this to me. I need to defend myself. I deserve way more than they're offering me. And while all this may or may not be true, it's great to just get it all out, put it all out there, get your emotions out, either write it down, talk to a friend, talk to your therapist, talk to your coaches, just get it all out so that you feel like you're heard and your feelings are validated. And then you have to take all those emotions out and then to be able to effectively communicate back. But typically afterwards, everybody takes a deep sigh of relief and they can really focus on communicating to the appropriate people, like their therapist, after everything's signed and the ink is dry and they walk away. Even if they feel like they didn't get a great deal or things didn't pan out the way they expected it, they're a little bit more centered.
Yeah. I remember my therapist, or excuse me, I remember our marriage therapist being the one, you know, to kind of coach us through speaking in those I statements and how much the difference between I and you statements sound. And Brené Brown, she in her TED Talk, or maybe it's her Netflix special. I think it's her Netflix special. She talks about a phrase that I have told a lot of people about. The story that I'm telling myself is, and when we remind ourselves that what we're hearing from our spouse who does know how to push our buttons, they know our life experiences more than the divorce team does. It's the story that I'm telling myself is he is wanting to XYZ. And if we just say that to ourselves, it reminds us that, yeah, there's truth in what I'm feeling. And that gives us this sense of validation and a little bit of comfort. But at the end of the day, this isn't the space for us to try to get our entire story out. We do have to remember that while they know how to touch our buttons, each of us, we have built these default narratives already about one another. And this is just a thought process that is compounded over time of living with the same person day in and day out. So we have these default narratives, and sometimes that's where we tend to focus in, and especially when we've already gotten to that place of divorce. You know, we feel like our perspective is the only reality, and it's hard to get out of that, especially if you have been blindsided with divorce or if you have been wronged, if you feel that you've been wronged, if this wasn't something that you wanted. Of course, you know, you're still in the grieving process of trying to kind of come to grips with this is what's happening and it is out of my control and I feel out of control. And you're dealing with a grieving process of loss. And when you combine all of that, absolutely, it makes sense that our communication is going to go awry. And so it makes sense to me that you're saying we hear that the most in the beginning. I think when people work with multiple facets of professions in the divorce process, we tend to come out of it on the other side a little bit calmer, like you said, even if we didn't get everything that we want, because we kind of felt like we had people to bounce things off of, that we strategized with people about how do I formulate this response. You know, we kept our emotions out of most of that. But women who don't know about these different professions that can help them, I would venture to say that that communication style hasn't changed before, during, or beyond divorce. Because even afterwards, we're very upset and that's going to affect the way that we can co-parent. How do you see that playing out sometimes?
You know, I always recommend for any divorce, because like you mentioned, it's a grieving process and you might hate your ex-partner or have all these feelings. And I always recommend you have to find a therapist to go through this grieving process, because if you don't start healing, you're never going to be able to move forward and thrive. You know, usually I'm seeing people as soon as they're served or as soon as it starts getting illegal, you know, we're hitting divorce, we're negotiating, blah, blah, blah. They just get very angry, or they just don't know how to handle all of this emotions and they're in the survival mode. So that's a totally different part of your brain you're using, and you don't want to live in survival mode. It's normal to go there, and fight or flight kicks in and you're always on edge and you're trying to just work through things. And the knee-jerk reaction is to respond right away because that's how you were trained during your marriage. All of that plays into how people are communicating back and forward. Your goal is really to move into thriving instead of just surviving and, heaven forbid, fight or flight for years that it takes for your divorce and then after. So a really good therapist is a perfect partner that you need for any divorce because you really do need to grieve that loss. And it's not I'm grieving my ex. It's I'm grieving what I thought I was going to have. Nobody gets married thinking they're going to get divorced. But if you are getting divorced, you definitely need to mourn what you thought this was your lifetime partner. And all of a sudden you're cut off in the midst of your lifetime, right? So you have to mourn that in order to be able to shift from survival mode into I'm thriving and living my life and not be living my life for that other person. I'm living it because I am a whole person myself. And that all impacts how you communicate to everybody.
It really does. And you bring up a good point because when we're going through a divorce, we have these two parts of our brain that are more reactive than in a normal settled state. The amygdala, which is that fight or flight, and then the prefrontal cortex, which that is the part of the brain that controls our rationale and it gives us the logic that we need to solve problems. And so when our amygdala is going off, it creates these different hormones, which physically alters our body. And so we biologically at that point cannot respond the way that we normally would. And then when you add into the fact that now our logical part of our brain isn't functioning, it makes sense that it feels overwhelming and chaotic, that we need some guidance to help us through that, like from here to here to here to here. And it's going to affect our communication, even if we are the best communicators. And having a healthy and effective communication style, it's going to be fundamental for any dynamic to be successful. It doesn't matter if it's with your spouse while you're married, if it's with your spouse during a divorce, or if it's with your spouse post-divorce and you are co-parenting. So especially during divorce, right? This is going to set the footprint for how do we move forward. Because if you do have children, even though you may not be a family unit within your same home, you are still connected. And your children are going to be the ones that are affected by this the longest. And so it is especially important during a divorce. So, I mean, obviously, I can think of multiple reasons as to why we would need to be cautious here. But I'm going to ask you, what are some of the consequences of allowing our emotions to hijack our communication? What can happen if we aren't able to, for lack of better terms, suck it up and shift the way that we communicate with our soon-to-be ex?
First, I'm just going to say, taking the high road does suck a lot. It's hard. It's difficult. You feel like your feelings aren't validated. They're, you know, like, what's the point? Because I'm not being heard. But especially if there are children involved in this, you have to be kid first. And the children hear and see, and they pick up on your emotion. They pick up on the communication back and forth between the parent. So obviously your kid's health will suffer. If they're seeing you guys push each other's buttons and react, especially in front of them. So I caution against actually communicating during these divorce proceedings in person, especially if children are present. You really just need to make sure they see, hi, here's the summary of the children. Thank you. Goodbye. Just pleasant and brief and move forward so that they don't feel like there's like mom and dad are fighting all the time. I'm sure they saw enough of that during the marriage. They don't need to see it once you're separate. And again, it only takes one person to cause conflict. I think seasoned professionals see that. If they label you high conflict, it's because it takes one person to cause that drama. You do not want to be the person they're looking at that's starting this. And so if you're always in, you know, fight or flight and you're letting your amygdala, as you mentioned, take over and not being able to like sit back and think about your communication and how you're speaking to your partner, then you look like you're the problem. And that doesn't serve you or your children in the future. You really need to come across as the very level-headed and kid first person. Unfortunately, in our society, women, as soon as we react to anything, we're labeled crazy or we're very emotional. So the bar is even higher for women just to come across as making sure we are not letting our emotions take over and being very factual, fact-based, you know, person-centered, and not reacting knee-jerk reactions, because knee-jerk reactions are never the right reaction to have.
Yeah. And yeah. You mentioned earlier, even in social media, having to be cautious there. What are some of the consequences that you have experienced or have heard of when women haven't been able to keep that in control, under wraps, and allow their emotions to take over on social media? Has that been used against them?
Absolutely. And any good lawyer will tell you immediately, do not post anything on social media, period, about your situation. You keep things happy, hunky-dory, like, or don't post. Like, it's tough in this day and age. Every minute of every life is on some sort of platform. Again, this is where it kind of sucks just to have to take the high road. But again, it's going to show you as more of this more stable people. If you get to the point of, you know, mediation and court, especially court, all of your Facebook postings, Instagram, Twitter, whatever is out there can be called into court, and you will have to justify your posts and why you posted them. I've seen sometimes ex-men actually bashing the moms and saying they're just here gold diggers and they're stealing money and they're keeping my kids away from me and things like that. And that's not played well to the court. So again, it is one of those things where you just really have to take the high road. And if it means uninstalling Facebook from your phone, because that's always with you, and it will require you to take an extra step, then do that, especially during this process. It's not forever. It's just a short period of time in your life that might take a year to 5 years, worst case, but it is still a very short part of your life. So whatever you need to do just to stay out of social media, because it can and it will be used against you to show that you're erratic and you're emotional and you can't think logically.
The same would be said for text messages that you're sending to your spouse or your soon-to-be ex, because those are things that they can screenshot, that they can provide and enter in as evidence. And your phone conversations, you never know if they have another device that is out recording your phone conversations.
Correct.
And again, I'm going to reiterate here, it sucks taking the high road. It drains you. And you said this earlier about your children. If you have children, putting your kids first, you've got to think about them. And what I want to say really quick is, if there's anybody listening that needs a little bit of a mindset shift on that, this might be helpful for you, because it was helpful for me. Because in a time where you have thought about everybody else and you are feeling wronged, or you are feeling like you are not being heard, you're not being seen, a mindset shift for me was, how do I want my son to see me and remember who I showed up as in this process? Because that allowed me to shift my focus on me serving me and my needs in terms of, how do I want my son to see me? Right? Not necessarily like, because I didn't want to feel like I was ignoring myself and my own needs by just thinking about what would be best for him. Right? We always think about what's best for him. In fact, that's probably the number one thing, if we have children, that is causing us to communicate in a negative and a really aggressive or assertive or passionate, I like that word best, passionate way, is because we are thinking about us and our kids and what's best for everybody else. And oftentimes women feel like maybe their husband might not be thinking about that. And so that is part of what's coming up with that reactive and that defensiveness. So if you shift it to think about, how do I want my kids to remember me showing up in this? You guys, I'm telling you, it sucks. I can recall a specific conversation where I sat in this chair and listened to a conversation with my ex that was degrading. And quite frankly, it wasn't even a conversation I should have been entertaining, because it wasn't his business. But at the same time, I knew that if we didn't just get through it, it was just going to fester on his end. And so I can't tell you the number of times that I had to bite my tongue, that I just really sat back and had to think about this one thing that our marriage therapist said, and I wasn't a huge fan of our marriage therapist, but she did give us one piece of advice that has stuck with me since. And during this whole conversation, I was thinking about this one phrase. And by the time I got off this call that was about an hour long, when I hung up that phone, I burst into tears. I was mentally exhausted. I think I screen cried for about 15 minutes. Because of how much energy it took out of me to remain calm and my best, highest self during that entire call. But here's the thing is when we go into defense mode, even on those calls with our spouse over something that, yeah, this isn't any of your business. I shouldn't be talking about it. What happens is that we're just fueling their side of things.
Yes.
We're going to get through it faster if we're just calmer. And the thing that my therapist had said was this: the key to effective communication is to be true to yourself and honest with others without throwing blame or shame. And I have since added to that, without throwing blame or shame on others or yourself, because I could have came out of that conversation and shamed myself for putting up with the conversation. But that wasn't what I was doing. That wasn't why I was doing it. And that's been my baseline for communication. But it's really important to note that it doesn't mean that I do this reactively, you know, especially in the beginning. It takes so much intentional thought on how to best communicate my need or my boundary. So much so that even in my post-divorce stage, I've had moments that I have made a note in my calendar drop for my next therapy appointment to discuss with my therapist something that warrants a response to my ex. Sometimes it's before literally replying to a text message, I might wait days because I know that I am really reactive about this. And every time I start to form a response, I can tell it's going to push some buttons. And so I need to uncover what is it that's deeper in me that is really being triggered here so that I can comfort myself and then still show up with that response. And sometimes I know it's something that I was able to reply to in a very simplistic way, but it sat with me. And I knew that that meant it was crossing some sort of boundary or something needed to be addressed, or there was some story working itself up in my brain that I was telling myself about him because of the narrative that I had built over time. And I knew that I would need to address it with him in order to honor myself and the goals that I have for my son. So I'm a huge advocate of working with a therapist. I mean, hands down, best money I spend every single week.
Absolutely.
New things come up as the months go by and new seasons come and go, especially if you have children and they're in your lives for forever. You know, having that intentional, dedicated time each week gives me the skill of pausing and not addressing everything reactively, but giving myself time to process and then present a response in a calmer manner. And so, again, whether it's text messages that can be screenshot or phone calls that can be recorded, and just because people say, well, they can't use something against me without my permission of recording.
Okay, no, well, they can.
Once the attorney has heard it, I don't think that they can unhear it, right?
And North Carolina is a one-party consent state. So if I can record you at any moment because I consent to being recorded, you do not need to know you're being recorded and you don't need to give permission. And those recordings can be used in court in North Carolina. Any state that's a one-party consent state, it's not just the lawyers that are hearing and unhearing it. It is the judge that will hear it, the mediator that will hear it. We are a one-party consent state. You have to keep that front and center.
Yeah. So if that's not enough motivation right there for you to take the high road in your communication styles, I don't know what else would be, right? But I mean, that's a mic drop right there. I mean, that's a big consequence, y'all, because you just never know when they're recording it or, you know, somebody else has gotten into their ear and they've hit record and put you on speakerphone. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've taken phone calls in my car. So if there's a witness or anything of that sort, you just need to make sure that you have a safe space for an outlet to navigate these things, because you do need to let it out, right? It's just 100%. You need to be very cautious as to where you are letting it out. There is an appropriate time people in place.
Yes.
In this circumstance, right? So
mm-hmm.
I'm really thankful that I've been working with my individual therapist before separating and then, of course, during my divorce. And obviously, there's only so much that a therapist can assist you with in this process within their scope. But what are some of the other ways, Christina, that a divorce coach specifically can help when it comes to the communication element when you're working with a client?
Absolutely. And everything, you know, what you just mentioned about taking the time to respond to a text, I actually recommend that everyone moves over to email. Text messages, it's very knee-jerk again. Phone calls should be reserved for emergency purposes if something happens to your children. Because again, recording, you don't have time to like center yourself in response. It's going to come across knee-jerk right away. So if you move over to an email, you have the time and you need to take that time. Just like Jamie mentioned, you know, you don't need to respond right away. So that's one of the things I always tell people to do immediately. Move all communication to email. It's documented. You can't gaslight yourself in this situation because it's in black and white. You know your truth and you know the truth because it's in black and white. It's all in writing, and taking that time is the first thing that I coach people on. So people tend to send me their emails that they receive that are making them immediately react with emotion. And then I can easily take that communication, tell you, take out the projection, take out the name calling, taking out all the emotion from the other side too, and say, here's the question. How would you respond to this question? And that's, I'm coaching them to see that, to read their emails for what they are. Is there even a question in there? Or is it all just projection and pushing your buttons to try to make you look bad when you do that knee-jerk reaction response? I do actually tell people, hey, write out the whole response. Write out your first knee-jerk reaction, either on paper, email it back to yourself and be like, blah, 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 you're jerk, this is awful, blah, blah, blah. Write it all out. Get it all out. It feels so good, but do not send it back to them. That is for you. You burn it later. You read it later to show your own growth. Then you take your time. A day, 2 days, 24 to 48 hours is a totally reasonable time frame to respond to any email. You do not need to respond immediately and hone your communication back. And that's where a coach can really help you. Because again, when they're sending these emails to us, sometimes we can't see the trees between the forest because all we're seeing is all that emotion tied to us, or we feel like they're hurting the children in this. They're, you know, and Mama Bear comes out in that. So you just need to take the time, send it to someone, have them read it. Is there a question in there? And what is that question that they need responded to? And you can mm-hmm. simply say, responded to or received. Thank you. If there is no question, if there's a question in there, you answer briefly with fact, no emotion. And that, again, is what I try to help people do is, you know, learn that, being able to read those emails and respond appropriately.
Yeah, it's really helpful to be able to bounce something like that off of a coach like yourself versus our friends or our sister yes. or our mom, because they are going to be emotionally invested like you are mm-hmm. because they care mm-hmm. about you, right? A coach has a little bit of that, you know, outside diplomatic perspective. Doesn't mean that they don't care about you, but they care about knowing what your end goal is, and they can see that bigger picture because they're not sure. in it as deep as you are. You know, not everything warrants a response.
No.
Sometimes we just don't even need to fuel it. The other exactly. thing that we have to recall too is that while, yes, absolutely everything in writing, I mean, I have a huge philosophy on things being in writing because, like you said, there is paper trail, right? Mm-hmm. There's no denying what okay. I did or didn't send to you because there's a paper trail. But we exactly. also have to remember that when people are reading something, they read it in the own tonality that they think that they're receiving it in. So you correct. Have to think about what is it that you know about your spouse. If they constantly feel like you ignore them, then not responding is just going to fuel that. So sometimes it is just as simple as received or noted. Thank you for sending You know, if thank you is too much for you, just say, got it. Whatever it is that can be just really simplified and difficult to construe. Now, some people will just twist it into whatever meaning that they want. Mm-hmm. But again, we are not in control of what anybody else does in terms of how they receive it. We are in control of speaking an I statement, using factual things, being true to ourselves and honest with others without throwing blame or shame. And so when we can do that, or we have a third party to help us, and I'm sure that you're able to help even with the communication with attorneys, because sometimes that's triggering too. Like they're not responding to me, or God, it's like I've already answered this, or why are they on their side? And sometimes if we have this third party that can help us take us out of it for a second and look at it from a bird's eye view, and then that way we can start to navigate, because you want to get to the end goal line. And this is the way to get through that is having a full-blown divorce team helping you along the way. So what would be the one thing, Christina, that you would want to leave women with that could potentially act as a reminder about communication to help them in the moment when they need it?
You know, the one thing I always say is your knee-jerk reaction is not the right one. And I think you need to keep that in your brain, just like, let's walk away without really blame or shame. That first initial, this is my response 30 seconds after you receive that email, is not going to be the response you want to send. So take your time, take deep breaths, walk away from it, and then come back when you're in a better headspace about it. You know, sometimes it takes you 3 days to get over a triggering email. You know, in a year or month or after some therapy and growth, it'll take you half an hour. These things will probably always spin you a little bit, but it's how quickly you can get over them. There is light at the end of the tunnel here. You can come out better for it. And actually, these communications, like you mentioned, will lead to other areas of your life. Work with your lawyers, with your people, with your kid. Just taking the emotion out and being calm helps everybody.
I don't know about you ladies, but I feel like I could use some of these reminders just about every time I need to speak with my ex. I mean, there's no denying that taking the high road can be mentally and emotionally exhausting. So I just want you to be sure that you're also carving out time for self-care, even if it's just a hot bath or taking a walk or scheduling a therapy session. It makes sense that we want to be heard and seen, and that can naturally lead to defensive or emotional reactions, making it easy for our emotions to take over when communicating with our ex. But y'all, there are some key things that we need to remember. You're gonna wanna have a safe outlet for releasing your emotions instead of directing them at your ex, because they can and will be used against you if necessary. So if you need to write out all of your emotional responses, go ahead and do that, but don't send it. Don't feel like you have to respond to them right away either. Waiting 24 to 48 hours is totally reasonable. Christina suggests that you keep your responses in email format, in fact. This way you have it in black and white to reference, and it allows you to sort through it, hone it in, and just send a brief and factual response. And a divorce coach can help you form these responses to your ex or even your attorneys if you need. And last but not least, ladies, if you have kids, it really does help to think of them first when it comes to your communication with your ex. This way you can keep your emotions in check for the long-term benefit. Ladies, I am sure that you have a desire to come out of this holding your head high, and from experience, as painful as it can be sometimes to just suck it up, controlling the way that you communicate can make a huge difference in this experience. Now, I don't want you to forget, we've got a one-pager that covers these reminders, along with a multitude of divorce-related guides and worksheets for you over in the Peace of Mind Resource Center. So head over to peaceofminddivorce.info and sign up to access the full library for free. Until next week, friend, I wish you an abundance of peace and determination.